Your Humanities Half Hour is brought to you by the Northern Marianas Humanities Council.
Welcome to Your Humanities Half Hour. I'm Catherine Perry. Today we wrap up our discussion on Article 12 of the Commonwealth of the Northern Mariana Islands Constitution regarding land ownership in the NMI. Today's program is excerpted from a one-hour television show. This program is actually one of three one-hour panel discussions focusing on Article 12, and we aim to provide an informed and objective presentation of facts and a variety of viewpoints relating to land alienation in the NMI. Now, we realize there's no way to cover all of the complexities of Article 12 in 3 hours, but this series presents basic information that hopefully will encourage you to discuss and consider this important topic with your family, friends, and colleagues. It's really intended for anyone wishing to learn more about the history, the effects, and the possible future of Article 12. In part one of our series, we looked at the foundation of Article 12 as negotiated in Section 805 of the Covenant to establish the CNMI in political union with the U.S. In part two, we looked at today's perspectives, including the impacts of Article 12 today as we now see it. And here in part three, we'll look at the future of Article 12. Does Article 12 need to change? What are some possible options for changing it? And who should decide on those changes? Our guests today are Vincent J. Semin, Carolyn P. Hosono, and House Vice Speaker Francisco S. De La Cruz. And our discussion is moderated by Attorney Robert T. Torres.
So let's just get right into it. In the first show, we talked about the history, the historical background for the land alienation. And in the second show, we talked about some of the issues that have come up with respect to Article 12. So today, we're going to talk about the future with respect to Article 12. And if we start with the question of this, as here we are today in 2013 discussing the land alienation provisions of Section 805 and as manifested in Article 12 of our Constitution. So as we stand on the threshold of moving forward into the future, what are the various issues or proposals with respect to Article 12 that we have seen or heard in our community today to try to deal with it? Vince?
The community, there are a number of different perspectives touching on Article 12. You know, on one side you have the proponents who want Article 12 to be left alone. On the opposite end of the spectrum, you have those groups who wish to abolish Article 12 so they can be given the opportunity to, you know, maximize the economic advantages of holding property here in the CNMI. Not necessarily to sell it, but also to just use it as borrowing collateral. And then you have proponents in the middle who understand that there are challenges with respect to indigenous Chamorros and Carolinians who are starting to fall below the 25% line. So there are various legislations that are being introduced to either just efforts have been made to introduce legislation that either extend the 55 years to 99 years, reduce to 25% to any degree, or even leave it up to voters to decide whether or not they can opt for a registration system where people want to protect their lands.
So Frank, can you expand a little bit on that and in some of the legislative efforts?
Yes, well, first of all, there have been numerous attempts in the past either amend Article 12. The most recent ones being in the 18th legislature was House Legislative Initiative 18-1. That was basically to reduce the block quantum from 25% to 1%. And so that has been passed in both houses. And now goes to the Commonwealth Election Commission for ratification on the 2014 election. Another initiative which I had the pleasure of introducing was House Legislative Initiative 18-4. And what this basically does is it somewhat authorizes landowners to declare restrictions on their personal property or land. And it would be somewhat of basically staying within Article 12 if one chooses to declare restriction on their property. Others that do not declare any restrictions are open to do whatever it is that they foresee.
So, Carol, we have groups advocating positions, and then the legislature trying. What about just from down in the community level? What are some of the things that folks are looking at with respect to Article 12?
Well, right now the buzz is the new initiative. When I just heard about it, it's just, baseline information. But just recently I got a chance to read into it. And from what I saw in the initiative, it's far different from my first assumption of what the bill was. So it's kind of different from the people's thoughts out there are different from what the bill entails.
So what are the folks that in the communities thinking about if the legislation may show a different view? What do you think they're looking at with Article 12?
I think they're looking at, especially the most popular part of it is the blood quantum, the government's ability to even calculate the bloodline of a person. So I think they're looking at that and thinking that this one solves it, that the initiative solves it.
But Vince, we had some experience with efforts to amend Article 12 in the 1995 Constitutional Convention, for example, to address the issue of adoption. Mm-hmm. And as to those constitutional amendments that were proposed, the voters back then approved none of them. So what is the movement now in Article 12 as to changing it, and how is blood now working into the discussion here as you see it?
Well, I think with each passing generation, there is a greater impact on the enforcement or the actual practice of Article 12. Back in 1995, maybe we have just been one generation removed where there were just very few who were approaching the 25% mark. But since that time, since 1995, our doors have opened up to the world. There's more interaction between NMDs and non-NMDs. So I think there's more of a dilution, and the common folk are seeing it more and more. And so I think that's the main push now, is that they're really starting to feel the immediate effects. It's no longer that it's going to be my grandchildren who are yet born, but it's my grandchildren who are already born who are going to be potentially affected by this. So I think it's an immediate threat, if you will, to many families. And I think that's why it was a different time then. And I think now that people are really realizing the impact being more immediate, I think that the minds are changing about the necessity to address that issue.
But Frank, Article 12, the definition of Northern Miranda's descent, is a political definition. You don't have the historical effort to bring in blood or alienage or ethnicity into it. So it's a political definition. Right. You don't have to be Carolinian. And so how has the discussion brought in culture and ethnicity today? Why do you see that coming in?
It's interesting because I was probably one of the very few that voted no on that initiative, which was to reduce the blood quantum down to about 1%. And the reason behind that was that There was a certain amendment that was made by the Senate, which basically restricts adopted children of non-NMD to inherit land or lands from their adopted parents. As you know, that has been the practice of the past and it to the current day. Once House Legislative Initiative 18-1 is approved, then the inheritance of property to these adopted children that are non-NMD will cease. And so I didn't believe that that was good moving forward. In fact, I find it discriminatory, or even racist, if you will. The word came out during the discussions.
Excuse me, but Carol, the 18-1 now prohibits if you're a child without any Northern Marianist descent, and you're adopted by a person of Northern Marianist descent, you don't acquire Northern Marianist descent status. That's the proposed change. How does that play into our cultural adoption of Puksai and Waimwe? How does that, how do you square that, or how do you address that?
Well, I'm afraid that instead of a person just looking at obligation, you know, love, tradition, culture to adopt a child, because there's many different reasons why people adopt. Either they can't have children, or they can't have any more children, or maybe their sister died and they want to take the children. Now they're going to have inheritance play into their decision making into adopting that child instead of just those basic cultural aspect and obligation.
We've been listening to part 3 of a 3-part series produced by the Northern Marianas Humanities Council on Article 12 regarding land alienation in the Northern Marianas, and we'll continue with more after this break.
Hafade, this is Eulalia Villagomez of the Northern Marianas Humanities Council. Did you know that you can donate up to $5,000 to the Humanities Council through the CNMI Education Tax Credit Program? Donations from individuals and corporations qualify and can be used to offset your local wage and salary tax, BGRT, and earnings tax. Call our office at 235-4785 to see how you can support humanities programs in our community and obtain a tax credit for your donation. Thank you, and Sizus Masi.
Welcome back to Your Humanities Half Hour. I'm Catherine Perry, and today we're wrapping up our discussion on Article 12 regarding land alienation in the Northern Mariana Islands. Looking to the future, our guests today are panelists Vincent J. Semin, Carolyn P. Hosono, and House Vice Speaker Francisco S. De La Cruz, and our discussion is moderated by Attorney Robert T. Torres.
It's about time to revisit Article 12. The negotiation, when they negotiated the covenant, they gave us 25 years of the Article 12, and then after that, we have to revisit it.
For me right now, Article 12, I changed my mind. We should really invite anybody that is willing to, you know, come and stay here and purchase the land.
I would like to own a piece of land someday because my parents spent their entire adult lives here. I will probably spend mine. And if I'm going to raise a family and have children here, then I'd like something to pass down to my posterity.
You cannot deny a public, a private ownership, you know, but not a public land ownership.
So let's talk about, you know, the future of enforcing and correcting and dealing with remedies with respect to Article 12. So Article 12 says that any transaction which violates Article 12 is void ab initio. So the framers put that in, meaning void from its inception, void from the beginning. So how, it appears to be a drastic remedy. It invalidates any such agreements or efforts to circumvent that. So how have we tried to deal with that kind of language in Article 12 in relation to our economy and investors here in the CNMI? Carol, how do you see that experience has been in the last several years?
Well, what I've been hearing outside is that it prevents them from even trying to come and establish themselves here, because they're going to come and they're going to fork out a lot of money when they do come. But also on the other side, other people were saying that even 25 years ago, when we had Article 12, millions of dollars still came rolling in. So there's still that, you know, both sides, using both those angles to look at Article 12 and see if it really is the cause of the economic being in the gutter as it is right now.
All right. Frank?
Well, I think that as we all know, the word void ab initio has been pretty much watered down to voidable by the courts, so that it does not seem very drastic. At the same time, I do agree that you know, our economy hinges on our tourism base, as well as the investors that come to our islands, and I truly believe that these two areas has to be protected at all costs in order for the economy to move forward.
So Vince, for example, in a couple of cases, right, where you have language that folks try to write in there, that in case the law changes, then we can get a lease extension, or we mm-hmm. can get the fee simple. And those have been struck down. So why not just strike the entire lease if that's what was intended in the language of void ab initio? Why not just go that way? Because, you know, the restriction is so important to bring in that drastic remedy. How do you square that?
I think oftentimes courts will try to respect the wishes of the parties. And if it was the wishes of the parties to enter into a long-term lease, then the courts would oftentimes look into the contract to see what they have, what they call severability clauses. The severability clause basically, it says that if there's any part of the contract that is deemed illegal, only that part will be stricken out, and the rest and the spirit of the remainder of the contract will continue. And I think that courts, you know, when land transactions were going on, it was really the Wild West. It was untested. Both buyers and sellers weren't as sophisticated to understand. I mean, buyers came as, here's the money, I'll get, you know, a piece of paper that says I have title. Oftentimes don't even realize what the terms of that title are. And so I think the courts tried to be equitable in justifying and looking, you know, trying to protect both interests. And so courts also have to say, you know, there's no automatic termination. It has to, you know, if there's a case that shows that it's that should be voided, then it gets voided. But only the court is the one who can really be the gatekeeper to make sure that, you know, people just don't do one and make their own amateur interpretation of the laws. So the courts try to protect the party's interests.
So Carol, with respect to, again, going back to the adoption issue that you observed, that you almost put a condition on an adoption by prohibiting children adopted by Northern Mariners descent from being able to own land.
Mm-hmm.
So how would that be enforced? How would a court look at that prohibition under this initiative, just from what Vince discussed?
That's a very good question. I'm sure people out there are asking the same question and asking if there were provisions that were put in to tell them exactly how they're going to do that. Like I shared earlier, it's an entirely new game. It's not just the traditional reasons of adopting anymore. Now there's something else hovering over their head. And when you talk about enforcing it, number one, who's going to do it? And how are they going to do it?
So Frank, the under Section 805, it says that the reason why you're having the restrictions is to promote the economic development of the people of the CNMI and to prevent their exploitation. So the question is, how does bringing in language that prohibits adopted children of NMDs from owning land, and how does adding in or reducing to just blood quantum, how does that promote economic development or prevent exploitation, if that was the original reason for the restrictions?
Right. You know, I believe that at some point in time, this new initiative is ratified and passed by voters, there will come a time when the question will be asked, and it will probably come to the courts, where disparity and unfairness among siblings.
Who is it that is going to decide on whether or not Article 12 is going to be retained, removed, or modified? Who is it that should decide? Frank?
Well, according to Senate Legislative Initiative 11-1, which was ratified by the voters of the CNMI, it purports to have Northern Marianas descent voters be the only voters as it pertains to Article 12 issues. And so that was voted by a vote of 6,000 out of 11,000 votes that were casted. At the same time, the question is still has not been answered, where we had Mr. John Davis filed a lawsuit against the Commonwealth Election Commission because according to him, he was not eligible to vote on Article 12 issues. The district court felt that his question or his lawsuit is not ripe at this point in time. Okay. Until an actual event took place, an actual vote was presented on Article 12.
Well, and that is according to the initiative 11-1, but that's one perspective, and that's what's right on the books. But Carol, on the question of regardless of what is on the books, what say you as to who should be the one to decide on Article 12?
This is actually a question that I've asked a lot of my friends, and this is Carolinians, Chamorros, Americans, Thais, you know, and a lot of them have also shared that if the NMDs feel that they should be the only ones to vote on it, they're gonna respect it, and that's my belief too, that if it's pertaining to Article 12, leave it as it is. Like the congressman said, it's been ratified, but whether it was or not, I feel that as it is right now, they should give the NMDs a chance to make that choice.
Okay. And Vince, what's your share, your thoughts on that or observation?
I think there are other members in the community who would respectfully disagree with that. I think that there are property rights that need to be respected, which obviously was what was conveyed through Article 12 and Section 805 of the Covenant. But I think voting rights are just a separate fundamental inalienable right that is separate from being able to own land. And I think voting rights reflect is just a cornerstone of any democracy. And I think we're a very young political entity. We're barely 25 years old. I think that these are maybe necessary growing pains, and the fight has to continue. I think we still haven't found that sweet spot yet where we're comfortable with how our future direction is going to go. I think that you know, now that blood quantum has really come into play as generations continue to dilute, that aspect's being addressed, but I think we might be having to go through more necessary evils of more people losing their land. It's unfortunate. We have a growing number of young populations who have no land. I can't remember the last time that homesteads were given out, and I think the waiting list was over 3,000. I hate to think that those people who have absolutely no land are going to be considered culturalists. But I think culture should start at the home. Yeah. What use is it if you have culture that of the land you stand on, if your parents or your grandparents do nothing to convey the customs, the mores, the behaviors of what it means to be a Chamorro? And I think that thus still continues, even for those 3,000 individuals who have no land or are still waiting for it, that they still embrace their culture.
Carol?
That's exactly what I asked my grandpa, Benedicto. I'm like, what is it about culture and land? You know, make me understand. And the other day I shared it with my kids that people are taking it literally. Oh, Juan sold his land, so he doesn't have his culture anymore. He's surely going to lose his culture. What he taught me is the people is their land. And if all hell breaks loose, everyone else can go back to wherever they want to, but we only have this piece of rock. Where are we going to go? So that's what he taught me. Whether I choose to farm on it, whether I build a mansion in it or a tin house, it's still going to be mine.
Right, and one of the observations in terms of looking forward is a lot of folks have been talking about it, but no one's really sure. There's been no study about what will be the impact if you keep Article 12, and what will be the benefit if you remove it, and what will be the consequence if you modify it, like right. This initiative. So in the first show, one of the framers, Pete A. Tenorio, was asking himself this question, that if they were discussing land alienation back then, they would have wanted to do a feasibility study of what the impact would have been. What are your thoughts on exploring that today before we start voting on it or deciding as well? Vince?
I would definitely agree with that proposal of doing a study on it. I think that we really should let the more objective measures guide us going forward rather than relying on inflamed passions of fears of that may never be materialized.
Thank you so much for joining us for our final discussion today on Article 12 regarding land alienation in the Northern Mariana Islands. Again, we encourage you to discuss this important topic with your family, friends, and colleagues, and we hope we've been able to provide some basic information and a variety of viewpoints for you to consider as you reflect on this important topic. We'd like to thank our moderator, Attorney Robert T. Torres, as well as today's guests, Vincent J. Semen, Carolyn P. Hosono, and House Vice Speaker Francisco S. De La Cruz, for making time, as well as the guests from our earlier shows, making time to discuss this important topic with us. This has been Your Humanities Half Hour. I'm Catherine Perry. This program was supported by a We the People grant awarded to the Northern Marianas Humanities Council from the National Endowment for the Humanities. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily